You're listening to the New Stack Makers, a podcast made for people who develop, deploy, and manage at-scale software. For more conversations and articles, go to thenewstack.io. All right, now on with the show.
KubeCon and CloudNativeCon conferences gather adopters and technologists to further the education and advancement of cloud-native computing. The vendor-neutral events feature domain experts and key maintainers behind popular projects like Kubernetes, Prometheus, Envoy, Core DNS, Container, and more.
Hey, all. It's Amsterdam in the afternoon. It's looking a little gray out there. We've actually had a lot of sun this week. You know what I love about Amsterdam? Mm. When it's sunny out, people go outside.
Yeah, it's been busy. It's a cool city. I'm liking it a lot.
Yeah. Have you been here before?
No, first time. I was supposed to be here in spring 2020.
Yeah.
You know, how all that went.
Yeah.
So
here with Xander Grzywinski, and Xander is with Microsoft, and he is an ambassador to the CNCF. And really played a big part in this most recent release for Kubernetes, version 1.27. And you said something interesting to me before we came on stage, so to speak. You said that this is really the first boring release for Kubernetes. And you said, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it reminded me of what I've heard a lot, like the whole goal is to make Kubernetes boring. What makes it boring?
I think it's reached a level of stability at this point, and kind of the core feature set has become more fleshed out and fully realized. Mm-hmm. I think I saw someone on Twitter say it's the first like big boring release. So we had more enhancements in this release than any in my recent memory. So 60 total features that were shipped. But still a boring release because it's boring in the sense that like they're all just kind of like solid refinements on features that have been around for a while, and it's really just helping things become as stable as they can be.
So provide me one example of that.
So I think storage primitives are something that have been around in Kubernetes for a while, and people have debated whether you should store persistent data on Kubernetes, but I think a lot of those primitives and APIs have become more stable. So one of the new ones that has gotten some excitement is the read-write-once access method. So there's a feature now where you can restrict access of a storage volume so only one pod at a time can read and write from it. Things like that. That's like just general refinement that makes the developer experience a little bit better.
Perhaps we could go back to some releases of the past that reflect on today's release. For example, that most recent update you just described. How had it been done before? And, you know, what have you learned was a learning process to kind of take it to where it is now?
Yeah, I think the team has really put a big effort on, I guess the team, it's hard to call it a team because it's so many people across so many SIGs, but there's been a big push on developer experience. And I think just on the release side in particular, we've learned that over-communicating as much as possible is key, particularly when we run into things like deprecations, like the Docker shim deprecation or the registry change this release, kind of picked up that getting that information out there as loudly and early as possible has been key for us.
Loudly and as early as possible. So tell me about how you were loud and how early did you get the word out there about this release.
So with the registry change, which was probably the big change for this release, and it's not even really a part of Kubernetes itself, but how people download it, we, as soon as we knew what we were doing, you know, banners on the website, community members tweeting about it and sharing it, it went out through all of the SIG mailing lists and Slack as well. So every mechanism that we have to communicate with the community, we're trying to utilize that to make sure folks are aware of these changes so it doesn't impact them in a negative way.
I don't want to get too deep into the weeds, but like, how do you measure that? Do you just look at engagement and what's working?
That's really the main mechanism we have. And that's certainly an area that we can probably get some refinement going forward on. But up until now, it's been, you know, things like Google Analytics and stuff. And
I'm reading from the post.
Sure.
It says that to host its container images, Kubernetes uses a community-owned image registry called registry.kh.io. What happened to KHGRC?
So that one was being hosted exclusively by Google, and the ingress and egress traffic for that, just to, for folks to download those images, ended up accumulating a lot of cost for the project, and Google was donating a set amount of money for us to utilize that. And with spinning up the new registry, we have like a proxy in front of that now, and so we're able to balance that a little bit across cloud providers, and in part thanks to a large donation from AWS to help us with that too. It's a great example, I think, of, you know, members of the project, of the community, kind of stepping up and ensuring that like hosting it and the infrastructure is sustainable going forward.
You also highlight the API removal and deprecation process. Mm-hmm. Why did you want to make a point of this?
That was based on some feedback we had gotten in the past. Like I mentioned, you know, like over communicate now.
Yeah.
We hadn't always been as good at that. I think the Docker shim removal was one that caught a lot of people by surprise. And so from that, we have learned that like we're going to do in the future a dedicated blog for deprecations and removals. And we're going to put that out earlier than the regular release blog, just so folks have that extra awareness.
And then use those other channels
yeah.
to amplify. Makes perfect sense. That's kind of what we do.
Yeah.
What else do I see here? There are some API removals.
So the one that's actually not in the blog that I think is really exciting and worth mentioning is the in-place vertical pod auto-scaling. Super cool new feature that, you know, it didn't make the blog because it's alpha this time around, but it's going to allow pods to scale to larger resources on demand.
That's a big deal.
That's an exciting feature that's coming down the pipeline.
So will that make it easier to scale your nodes?
Yeah. So it's... You know, when you create a new pod and you set the like memory
right.
and CPU limit
right.
and stuff like that, now in the future, that pod will be able to scale up to a configured level without having to restart.
Without having to restart?
Yeah.
How are you doing that?
You'd have to ask Signode.
Okay. All right. I won't get into the weeds there. I was seeing, like, what are some of the larger nodes we're seeing people deploying these days?
I don't know on particular node side. I do know that we more and more users are starting to deploy larger and larger clusters. So I have heard about clusters being operated out there in the 5 to 10,000 node range. And it's I think it's particularly useful for companies that used to operate like Mesos platforms where, you know, you could have an entire data center be a single cluster, and Kubernetes hasn't always kind of conformed to that pattern in the past, but there's been a lot of work pushing that cluster size bigger.
So if we're going to look ahead, what are some of the matters that we're looking at with version 1.29?
So the next one, I think... We'll see. It'll be a lot of those current features that are in beta. I think that went beta with this release will likely go to stable with the next release. There's ones that come to mind like KMS V2. I think that'll probably be 1.29 or 1.230 stable. But we always kind of end up finding out in the first couple weeks of the release what the SIGs put forward for graduation.
Uh-huh.
So you've got that enhancements freeze milestone 3 to 4 weeks into the release cycle. And by that time, the new release team will have locked in what they expect to see in the next release.
So it was explained to me once by Brendan, the release cycle. Can you summarize it for me?
Yeah, so we start the release cycle and put out a call for enhancements. And so at that point, all of the SIGs are going to submit the features that they would like included in the release and what API stage they want them included at. And then we have an enhancements freeze in that 3 to 4 week window. And then the next major milestone that occurs is going to be the code freeze for all of those enhancements. And at that point, release happens after that. This release was notable. And some of y'all that read the blog may have seen that the theme is chill vibes with a sloth logo. And we landed there because this is the first release in my over 3 years on the team where we didn't get a single exception request at enhancements freeze time. Everyone just had it together. I think the process is kind of running itself at this point. Like,
yeah. What was the logo?
It was a sloth like hugging
nice.
the Kubernetes logo, and he's got sunglasses on. And
oh yeah, I think I have seen that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are you working on these days, and will you be continuing to work on the new releases?
So traditionally, most leads end up taking a cycle or more off after leading. So I've been on the team for over 3 years now, and I've moved up through communication sub-team enhancements and now to release lead. And so I'll probably kind of take a step back at this point and try to make some space for newer contributors to,
what are you gonna do?
To come up. Maybe my actual day job. We'll see. I do a lot of open source work with some projects Microsoft contributes to, like Open Policy Agent Gatekeeper, and got some other stuff coming down the pipeline too. I'll probably actually be more on the feature side for Kubernetes for a little while, helping out there rather than the release side. But, you know, release leads do usually come back to do like an emeritus advisor role at some point down the line. So that'll probably be the next time I revisit the team.
What would you say that is going to be new about Kubernetes and releases to come? It seems like we're getting to the point now. You see it in the conference here, where, like, for instance, in the keynotes, there's not a lot of new stuff to really talk about.
It's weird, but what excites me at this point, like, I love being a part of the community and working on core Kubernetes, but there's some really exciting stuff happening just in the ecosystem surrounding Kubernetes. Like, there are, like, a lot of companies here at this conference building some amazing abstraction on top of it. And I think that's what's cool to me, is now that we have this substantial base layer, like what people do on top of it. And it's really cool to see the way folks are just running with it.
What do you think about WebAssembly and how it integrates with containers and playing in with Kubernetes?
WebAssembly is cool. It's one of those technologies that makes me feel completely incompetent, because every time I try to read about it, I think my eyes cross and it's like, wow, there's some people that are much smarter than me writing this spec and doing some things here. It seems like it is going to be like the next big wave of cloud computing. And I know we've got a lot of folks on my team at Microsoft that are working hard to bring WebAssembly functionality to the server side and making it easier to develop there. And I've got some close friends that are doing absolutely amazing things at Fermion. So I really can't wait to see where the ecosystem goes.
They've done some great stuff over there.
Yeah.
So going forward then, like as far as the edge goes, for example, are you seeing more interest in how Kubernetes can be used on the edge?
So outside of the release context with my job with Microsoft, it's one of the things that I hear about the most. So we're going to be working on testing some functionality with like the CSI secret store driver to fetch secrets and keep that compatible in like disconnected scenarios at the edge. It's something that I have been hearing about a lot with Kubernetes, and does seem like the next place that Kubernetes itself is going to go.
So how do you see that in releases? Like, how do you prepare for like that kind of next generation of architectures where the infrastructure is essentially outside the data center?
I think that'll largely be driven by the SIGs, and particularly I think SigNode has some awareness of what the future looks like there. They do some really, really complex work that I think is truly amazing. And yeah, I think coming down the pipeline, we will likely see a lot more support for that, and the SIGs will all be driving it.
So it's still exciting and new in many ways, but boring at the same time. Maybe that's a way to put it.
It's, you know, boring in an exciting way. Like, yeah.
So what are you looking forward to when you go home from what you've learned here? Is there anything here that you've been learning about that you're looking forward to going home and, you know, thinking about and trying things out?
I think this is maybe a boring answer, but I think I'm looking forward to a nice rest.
There you go.
You know, the release came out last week, and we timed that purposefully to have this event occur the week after. And so it's been a real chaotic and exciting couple of months. And so in the spirit of the release, I think I'm looking forward to having a boring few weeks when I get back.
Well, Xander, thanks so much for taking the time to talk.
Yeah, thank you.
KubeCon and CloudNativeCon conferences gather adopters and technologists to further the education and advancement of cloud-native computing. The vendor-neutral events feature domain experts and key maintainers behind popular projects like Kubernetes, Prometheus, Envoy, Core DNS, Container, and more.
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's one of the best ways you can help us grow this community, and we really appreciate your feedback. You can find the full video version of this episode on YouTube. Search for The New Stack, and don't forget to subscribe so you never miss any new videos. Thanks for joining us, and see you soon.